A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 17, 1991, in the series The Sign of the Cross, The Way of Jesus, entitled, Whose Truth Are You Living? The scripture reading is John 12, verses 20 through 33. The text for the sermon is John 12, verses 27 and 28. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
I recognize that I take a certain risk because sometimes old accepted and familiar and comfortable ways are shaken as we wrestle together at the foot of the cross trying to understand the gospel of Jesus Christ. And then preaching is not the best medium in the world. I get to do all the talking and you get to do all the questioning, but never raise your questions. Well, someone had questions last week, and thank God, before they went home to dinner, they asked me about it, and we had a chance to understand each other and that truth to which we were trying to point yet last week. And then in the course of the week, I got a marvelous letter from that person who's given me permission to share with you this incident. A letter which I won't read to you in its completion, although it's well worth it, but a letter that simply begins by saying that she was sent into a state of disequilibrium, but that was all right. And then telling about her experience coming here spiritually numb, emotionally dead, and finding here through the whole life of this community meaning and purpose and richness. And also recognizing on reflection that the very truth of the message that at first sent her into disequilibrium was a deep truth of her own life that she really knows but had forgotten for a while. And then concludes, when you are preaching a sermon, you almost seem bigger than life. So powerful, so wise, so deeply committed to your beliefs. I find it so comforting that you can be all of that and approachable too in such a big church where it would be easy to get lost in the shuffle. I have a sense that I do matter. Thank you for that. Letters like that mean more to me than I can tell you. And I share it with you because her experience may have been the experience of others of you. And what I like about the letter, what I appreciate, is the fact that there was an acknowledgement that there was disequilibrium and the conclusion that that was good. Thank God for those who come not always seeking to be confirmed in long-held truths, but also to be dislodged from old truths in order that new truths might emerge. And I share with you the letter also because it gives me an opportunity to invite you always to speak to me. I know this is kind of an intimidating situation. I thought one time that something I had done was particularly good, only to find out someone said, no, it wasn't so good. It's just that you're over 6 foot tall and you kind of look like God. Well, you know, how do you dare take on someone like that, right? But the thing that this person found last week is that I'm not really so wise, that I'm not really one who has all the answers, but really a fellow pilgrim trying to believe in the midst of my own doubt and to find my way in the midst of my own question, but always attempting to move you along with myself out of that safe and comfortable set of truths, in quotation marks, into a deeper truth that is a solid foundation, that is trust in the eternal God such that no matter how ideas, theories, doctrines, creeds, events, experiences, no matter what may come, that we will together be so fundamentally rooted in the eternal good and gracious God that nothing, nothing, nothing can shake us. In the cover of your bulletin, there's a statement or two that I had put there. It's out of a book that's one of my favorites. It's kind of a daily journal, spiritual diary. Gene Sullivan says that outsiders look at the church and condemn it because too often the leaders of the church are like parrots mouthing the words of dead people. That too often we simply become walk-ons for the apostles. That we are living in a house of thoughts that were thought long ago but are not really our own. And the reason that that is dangerous is because that will not stand you in the test. In order to be able to stand in the test, you have to be living your truth. And so I ask you this morning, whose truth are you living? Would you die for it? That is where it came down to for Jesus. In the early part of John's Gospel, his mother says to Jesus, "They're out of wine." He says, "Don't bother me, my hour is not yet." In the 7th chapter of John's Gospel, where they are not really impressed with everything that's going on, they challenge him, "Why don't you go public, go to Jerusalem, do your thing?" He says, "My hour is not come." But then he goes to Jerusalem, it's the feast of the Passover. Philip and Andrew come to him and say, "There are some Greeks here and they want to see you." And it's like that is a trigger. And Jesus said, "Now is the hour." And then if you skip two or three verses, you'll go down to probably where the dialogue continued. "Now is the hour. And what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. No. For this hour came I forth. Father, glorify your name." In the crisis, Jesus stood firm. John uses a strong word which, although he doesn't take us into Gethsemane as do Matthew, Mark, and Luke, nonetheless gives us the same experience. "My soul is in turmoil. I do this with fear and trembling, but I do it. I can do no other. I will stay the course. I will remain true to my truth." Unless a truth is one's own, one will not stand in the crisis. And certainly one wouldn't die for it. And I'm not suggesting that we all start out with a blank sheet as though we were the first generation that ever lived and we have to make our own truth. No. No, we are a part of a tradition. We just baptized little children and asked parents to promise to nurture them in the faith. And our children left a few moments ago and went to the worship center where we tell them the story. We tell them the story because we want our children to know the story, to hear the story. We do tell it differently, not the story, but we do approach them differently than we used to. When I was there, the story was told, and that was it. Today, we tell the story, and we invite the children to wonder. And children have a wonderful insight. If we don't stifle it with some truth stamped on them, some truth imposed from the outside, but some truth that it arise within them as they hear the story. And we are a community of faith. We share a tradition. We share a responsibility to nurture our children. We hold a common faith and a common longing and a common hope and aspiration. Finally, you can't live by my truth. And for all my sins, one of them is not that I have ever demanded that of you. How many times have I said here, Christ Community has no party line? There is a truth, but none of us has it. All of us has a relative grasp of that truth that is always beyond us. And all our lives we are on pilgrimage. God save us from ever arriving so that we can sit there settled and judge another who is not there with us. God keep us young and alive and searching and open, because there is no grasp of the truth at any point in one's pilgrimage that is as full and rich as that new surprise of grace that may come through some crisis experience, enabling us to emerge with a wonder and a glory that we never even dreamed of. Jesus came to the crisis. And in fear and trembling, proceeded to the cross. Can you remember the last time you didn't like yourself very well? Can you remember the last time that you disappointed yourself? I bet I know what happened. I bet it was a time in which you didn't live up to your best truth. I bet it was a time that you denied the truth that you really know. I bet it was a time that you compromised, or for the sake of expediency, took one fork of the road when your truth pointed you down the other. And along life's many decisions that we have to make, that's one thing. But it's when we really get in the crunch, at the point of crisis, that it will either be the truth that is our own, for which we would die, or we'll not stand in the flood. Can I tell you a little personal story? About 3 years ago, I wrote an article for the Theological Journal Perspectives, which you all know of. It was an article in which I was raising some theological questions that I think are important for the church to face. And I got into real trouble, you remember? And consequently, I'm no longer the professor of preaching. You know that. That was no big deal, really. I even hesitate to mention it when I'm talking about Jesus and His hour and His crisis. But can I tell you my experience out of that experience? I'm kind of a nice guy. I may be over 6 foot and look like God, but I'm really a teddy bear. Try me. I've always had a need to please people. Always a need to be accepted and to be liked. It's funny, people like that often go into ministry and they're exactly the ones that shouldn't. It wasn't easy for me finally to stand on my truth. But it was a deliberate choice. I counted the cost and stood firm. And it was the most liberating experience of my life. I ended up kind of liking myself for it. And after I'd done it, I would have done it all over again. One of my colleagues at the seminary said, you know, if Dick had just changed 6 sentences in that article, there would have been no trouble. That's right. No trouble. No truth. Dear friends, whose truth are you living? Would you die for it? Jesus did.